I'd like to call the August 7th, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
There.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Nakasi has also asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
The 13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And in terms of the order of business tonight, I'd like to move a few things around for the benefit of staff. So I think if we could take the redistricting resolution. It's on consent. If it stays on consent, that would be fine. If not, we'll do that first. And then the rollover resolutions for Kevin. For the public, I have Faye Gugakis signed up first, but I don't see her. So, Victor Tiffany.
Good evening, Victor Tiffany Danby, and the coordinator for the local Move to Amend affiliate. I had in mind tonight to read some of the draft of a post I'm working on entitled Pushing Conservatives Through the Overton Window. It sounds much more violent than it is. Overton developed a theory of political change developed by the Mackinac Center where he worked that described how politicians will vote for a fairly narrow range, a window of possibilities, not decided by their decisions or preferences, but rather by the public. But I've changed my mind. I'll be more than happy to email you the link when I get it finished. Instead, I want to follow up on a comment made by Madam Chair the night that the votes were taken on the resolutions calling on Congress to amend the Constitution. You said something along the lines of we should establish or develop a forum. We should present a forum of some sort. And you have all the ingredients you need. This is the Internet age. You could instruct your IT persons to use the video segments of our appeals for this resolution, the debate among yourselves, particularly Peters and the two concentric circle charts, and put together a video that describes the process you went through to pass those two resolutions. It might also include interviews or monologues with Mr. Stein, someone from our organization, to make it more rounded and give the public a better idea of where we're coming from. It's just an idea. I think it would be pretty easy for you to put together. It wouldn't be very time-consuming. There's no rush. It wouldn't have to be done this summer, but it would be very helpful. I looked at a list of resolutions that have passed around the country this month, and there's extremely few that have been passed by county legislatures. You are the vanguard. And it would be helpful if you could put together a video form to that we could point to with other activists around the country and get county legislatures to follow in your footsteps. So once again, thank you for passing those resolutions.
Thank you, Victor. Faye Gugakis.
I ran here, so I'm going to catch my breath a little bit. Faye Gugakis, City of Ithaca. I'm going to be talking about two things, one which I've talked about quite a bit already. But I'll start with the first one, which is the rise in crime in our community. This is something I've been observing for quite some time. It's also an issue that it's in great denial by leaders and our police staff. If you keep denying that there's a rise in crime in our community, it's only going to get worse. If you don't deal with it, it's only going to get worse. Okay? I find that we are in a very critical and serious situation. In the city of Ithaca, more so than the rest of the county, but it will affect the rest of the county if it hasn't already. I went to the city council meeting on Wednesday. The responses were not good enough for me. Mayor saying, well, we're not as bad as Syracuse. And another council member saying, well, what will keep the lights on at night in the neighborhoods? Well, a lot of the crime is happening during the day, okay? I really think that our community has let our guard down. Where are the statistics? Are we following up on, you know, the rise in crime, which does exist? When I spoke to the police chief 2 years ago about this issue, he said there's no rise in crime. When I was at the council meeting on Wednesday, okay, and I saw the responses, which was not acceptable to me or for the community, two council people in the second ward said they met with constituents, and I was not aware of that meeting. I was not aware that they met with the constituents, and they're afraid. And they're very worried about the rise in crime. Now, the next day, there was nothing in the Ithaca Journal. That's very telling that wasn't reported on. Why is it not reported on? I'll tell you what I think why. Because nobody wants to talk about it, okay? We have a whole bunch of students coming into our community.
One
very
more minute.
Soon, okay? I hear through the grapevine we have a heroin problem. You know, we have serious drug problem in our community. Syracuse has it. Cortland has it. A lot of the communities upstate has it, okay? It has become a magnet. We have 5 to 7 head shops on the commons. It is a disgrace where our community is going, okay? We have become a magnet. It's not acceptable to me. Now, because I don't have a lot of time, I want to just say very quickly about the wireless technology, which I've talked about before, okay? If you've noticed, many of the new cars now, you can't see in. So if you're in law enforcement trying to crack down on somebody on a cell phone or texting, it's virtually impossible. It's getting hard for me as a cyclist to see what the other person is doing. That visibility is very important, whether you're a pedestrian, whether you're a cyclist, and whether you're an officer or someone driving a car. And I am shocked in this community that is supposed to be enlightened and smart that this is not an issue.
Okay, thank you, Faye.
And you know, the way you deal with that is you write a resolution. The city and the county to Schumer, who does care about the issue, and say, we want manufacturers of automobiles to not have these kind of tinted windows. Okay?
Faye, thank you.
And
if you have anything else to say, you can send us an email.
I'm not sending an email. I don't communicate that way. That's why I'm here.
Then write us a letter.
I'm tired of the digital world, which is taking over and taking my rights away. The wireless technology is dangerous for many, many reasons. Okay, the post office is going to disappear.
We hear you, Faye. Your time is up.
No, there's no leadership here. I'm sorry.
Okay. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just being reminded by Faye, just to alert you, you may want to alert some of your residents. We've had a little bit of a rash of crime in Caroline the last month. The number of fruit stands and farmers, little fruit stands, roadside flower sales, probably 5 of them have been hit 3 or 4 times, believe it or not. I only heard about this over last weekend. We've had a concern with people actually showing up in other people's homes. And it's alleged that it could be drug-related. So if you have, you just may want to put anybody selling by roadside stands and the honor system, you may want to put some of your people on alert. This is a little bit early, but I want to remind you that next month, Friday, September 21st, is the Watch Fire in Lansing at Myers Park. I'll leave this poster up here so that you can see it. I know in the past several of you, Mike and Pat, have attended. I think Peter was there as well. Leslin was there with JR last year. And you're welcome. It's, of course, sponsored by the Vietnam Veterans Chapter 377. Second item.
Excuse me, Frank, could you say the time again, please?
Say again?
The time.
7 o'clock. 7 p.m. is when the ceremony begins. This Thursday at Empire Farm Days up in Seneca Falls, we're having another meeting. We have quarterly meetings for the Ag Blue Ribbon Ag Committee that the governor and NYSAC have put together. And Pat and I are the members of that. Both of us try to keep abreast of any issues, particularly agricultural ones, which this group will be dealing with. Hope to bring you back a report from there, and we hope that we can make some headway. There's some concern because the farm bill has been stalled. Congress is not going to act on it now, we suspect, till after the election in November, and that's a little bit of a detriment to anybody locally who's a farmer or in agriculture. I think I'll stop there.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Brian, and then Pat.
Thanks. Just letting folks know that up in our little corner of the county, this coming weekend is a field days carnival, and next weekend is the annual Grattan Old Home Days. You get two bites of the apple. Normally they're together, but because of some scheduling conflicts, we now get to celebrate 2 weeks in a row. And in keeping with what appears to be the theme of the night, if we happen to get out of here by 9 o'clock, it is National Night Out tonight, and maybe we can join in on some of the festivities involved with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. I think there are things going in the city and in Newfield, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Pat?
Thank you. This is going to be a good weekend to visit the towns that are celebrating, I think, because on Saturday we'll be celebrating the Harbor Fest out in Lansing. You're all cordially invited to come out to Lansing Park during the day on Saturday or in the evening for some terrific music out there. We'll have barbecue chicken. We'll have lots of tables and booths. We'll have various entertainment during the day. So everybody's welcome. Feel free to come on out.
Thank you, Pat. Leslin.
So I too want to jump on what Faye started about crime in our community, and a reminder, like Frank did, to all our neighbors to just be cautious about locking your doors. I know in the summertime we all get, you know, pretty lax and comfortable, but there seem to be a run on people's cell phones. I mean, this is happening during the day. She's very right. People are breaking into houses or walking into doors that are open, and taking stuff can be very threatening. We still hear about incidents of, you know, fights and brawls and all kinds of stuff happening in our community, and it's scary to some folks. I also do want to caution people that summer camps are still in session. We have lots of children in our streets going to camps, going to activities. It's still the summertime, and caution our drivers about just looking out for them. Because I see people just, it's summer, folks put their top down, crank up the music and go. And oftentimes they're not paying attention. So just to be reminded. So I really do, you know, although Faye got a little heated, I do want to thank her for talking about the crime issue, because it is happening in our community, and just reminded all of us to be very, very careful and to be looking out for each other.
Thank you, Leslin. Jim, and then Dooley.
Very quickly, Karen Davies, gold medalist, Ithaca High School. Megan, she was from IC, and I don't remember her last name, also on the same team. Morgan Usaini is a semifinalist in the 1500 meter. And I believe the young woman from IC was from Naples, New York. And it goes on and on, all the people from this area who are who are doing amazingly well in the Olympics in London.
And Andrew Burns, rowing for Canada, got a silver. So Terry and Jim Burns' son. Dooley, Carol, and Peter.
Could I ask less than a question first?
Sure.
Do you share Faye's concern that the police are in denial?
I don't necessarily share the concern.
Okay.
But I just want neighbors to be extra vigilant.
No,
as
I understand
well.
That. Thank you. Yes. I am not looking forward to this weekend in what I'm talking about today. I'm looking back a couple of days. August 5th, which we just had on Sunday, was the 151st birthday of the federal income tax. And I want to read a little bit about that. In 1861, the Civil War was straining the federal government's budget. There were fears that the Confederacy would capture major Atlantic seaports, depriving the federal government of major income source from import tariffs. Lincoln conferred with members of his famed team of rivals, cabinet, about constitutional approaches to taxation, and they agreed on a tax for high earners. In those days, high meant anyone earning more than $600, a figure which excluded most Americans at that time. The new tax was progressive even above the $600 mark. Earnings up to $10,000 were taxed at 3%. Those above $10,000 were taxed at 5%. So that we had progressive taxation from the very beginning. That seems to me worth celebrating. And then on Monday, a day much less celebratory, that's the 67th anniversary of our dropping the bomb in Hiroshima. And I really didn't see either of these items marked in our community. Sometimes they are, but not this last one wasn't, as far as I know. And that's a very solemn occasion to remember in our history, not a cheerful one. I'm glad we have happy things to celebrate this weekend, but that was not a good one. That's all.
Thank you, Dooley. Carol, then Peter.
I have a few things. I just took Jim's listing of congratulations to the Olympic medalists. I just want to have us all claim Gabby Douglas. What an amazing thing, and who really doesn't deserve the flying squirrel label. If we're not similarly labeling other athletes. F&I, a report won't be till fairly late in the meeting, and I wanted there to be time to circulate for you this one copy that I have of the Tompkins County pre-1952 bridges report that the Highway Department put together for us. It's something that you can look at, glance at during the meeting, because it's pictures, is what Tompkins County's bridges looked like and were like, the ones that were built a while ago. So as we have decisions that we have to make about bridges, many of which are getting pretty old and need attention, you should just have this in mind. So I will start passing around. I'd like to end up with it at the end. And then I just want to congratulate Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services that received an award yesterday of $1.4 million from the Community Development Financial Institutions Fund, the CDFI Fund, which is a program of the U.S. Treasury Department that supports organizations that have a core mission of community development lending to low-income households. But to note that these funds are allowed to go to households earning less than median income, unlike many of the programs that need to be at lower than a certain percentage of median income. If you can earn 100% of median income, for example, $74,800 for a family of four, and be eligible for this money. So this money comes into our community, as did their award of, I think it was 2 years ago, of $750,000 from this program. And then when it gets repaid, it stays into the community and gets reloaned and puts properties on the tax rolls. And what's notable about this particular award is that it was the maximum amount. It only got awarded to 177 grants across the entire nation, and all of the other organizations that received maximum amounts have huge names that you would recognize nationwide, like Calvert Social Investment Fund, Enterprise Community Loan Fund, the National Community Investment Fund, and there's our own Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services with the maximum $1.4 million award. There isn't any provision for helping them publicize this award. It's unlike some of the other funders, they don't assist you in making sure that the public, and there's no announcement by your congressional representative that you got this. And I don't know if, they don't have the kind of distribution list that we have, so I don't know if this is something that Marcia could help with once they have a press release, or that we can help claim or whatever.
But wives of executive directors are okay to make announcements.
Sorry?
The wives of executive directors are permitted to make announcements, right? For getting the word out.
Who is the executive director?
I'll let that one pass.
If Paul wants to send something to Marcia, if she can fit it into her schedule, I'm sure she'll help.
I think that's the last item I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Peter.
Yeah, I'd like to report on something I did 10 days ago that I found very moving, and I feel impelled to share it with you. My wife and I went to Cooperstown to Glimmerglass, which we go to every year, and it's quite a, I don't know how many of you go, but it's a real opportunity. It's a place that's close to us that really allows you to hear first-class music, if that sort of thing appeals to you. But there are four productions a year, and we go, and we saw all four, and but the one that I found absolutely devastating was something I'd never heard before and I'd only vaguely heard of. It's an opera that was written in about 1940 in the U.S. by Kurt Weill called Lost in the Stars, which I sort of thought was a musical, but it isn't. And it tells a terribly sad story that affected me deeply about what happens to people who are in a situation where they lose hope, where the oppressed people who are put in terrible situations and nothing they can do to get out of it. And I thought about this. It's terribly sad, okay? I thought about this. This is set in South Africa in around 1940. And driving home, I sat and thought about that and realized that my grandparents, Nathan, I have grandparents too, and they grew up in a similar environment. They grew up in part of the Russian Empire at a time when they were marginalized and oppressed, and they had no hope. There was nothing they could do to get out of the situation that they were in, except there was one faint glimmer that if you could save up somehow enough money to have one person get on a boat and go to this mysterious land across the ocean, they'd find a place that where the streets were paved with gold and you could make a life for yourself. And you couldn't scrape up enough money to take your family, but the man would scrape up enough money first and go there, and then he would work hard and get some money and bring his wife over. And that was the story of both of my grandparents. And they came and they found a place that they found a country exaggerated. The streets were not paved with gold, but by God, if you sat down and you worked hard, and you could, in fact, get somewhere. And my grandfather, my father's father, got a job in a diner, and somehow he learned how to do that and moved to Omaha, Nebraska, and set up a small diner and was successful. And my mother's father knew how to sew, and he sewed, and after a while he was able to save up enough money to bring his wife and daughter over and set up a tailor shop in Brooklyn, and together they succeeded. And it was fantastic success that my mother was solidly in the middle class. That tailor shop provided enough income to send her to Cornell. And my father's diner provided his son with enough money to go to college at the University of Nebraska. And these people were vaulted into middle class. And that story simply could not have been repeated in South Africa. And in South Africa, these people had no hope. And what this opera does is shows what happens to people who lose hope. And it's absolutely devastating. It runs for another 2 weeks, and if you got some spare time, you might think of going to see it. So that was a little story I wanted to tell.
Thank you very much, Peter. Mike.
Last Friday, Concord-Corlin Community College held its 19th commencement for its Global Connections program. And for anyone who hasn't gone to one of those wonderful commencements, you really missed something, and I hope you'll try to get there in the future. 70 young people from six different countries, including the Dominican Republic, Peru, Spain, Turkey, Honduras, and I'll forget the last one, had spent at least two summers, some of them three, at TC3, where they were immersed in English as a second language and studied hard to obtain a joint associate's degree there with their own colleges back in their own countries. They are studying usually international business administration. Some of them were studying construction technology and such courses. They got their degrees. Many of their families came up and stayed in Tompkins County or Cortland County for this program of the commencement. And a lot of the young people, we've been tracking them. There's over 3,000 graduates of this program now, which I think is pretty impressive. A lot of them have moved into jobs in their own countries of significant importance in politics, in business, in other things. And they think kindly about their time here. That was one of the things that I enjoyed hearing, was them speak about being here in Tompkins and Cortland counties and the good program they had at TC3. I think this is something we ought to be very, very proud about, that we do this each year. And hopefully more of us will come to see that commencement the 20th next time.
Thank you, Mike. Carol.
Can I just add something to that? So this is the program to bring the international students to get the two-year degree. I hosted a student. They are always looking for families or homes for these students to live. And they, you know, it's not a huge time commitment on your part. They're, you know, they're old enough to be independent, and they take the bus out to TC3 if they need to. And it was a wonderful thing to do and broadened my horizons.
Great.
And for years we continued to keep in touch with this young woman from Belarus. I encourage you to consider it and to urge your friends to do so.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? Frank.
I just want to add something to Jim's report on the Olympics. We had a young man from Brooktondale, as you might know, compete in the rowing as well. Mr. Cornelius, who is an Ithaca High grad, and he and Andrew trained at the Cascadilla, Andrew Burns trained at the Cascadilla Boat Club under Rogie. So it's got a lot of people. It'd be nice to get them all assembled here, Jim.
Yeah, it would be.
And it would be,
you know,
really
that probably is possible at some point. I was only talking gold medal when.
Are you an elitist?
Nothing but the best.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. The community has a. It's not my turn, but I think the most important thing that's happened in the last 48 hours is the Mars lander. And I think there are incredible, probably a number of people in Ithaca, New York, and Cornell who were involved in that. And literally it was like winning the Super Bowl, 3 million or 32 million miles away. So that was pretty cool, I thought.
Absolutely. That's right. All right, anyone else? Thank you all. I'll go ahead with my report. I thought Svante would be here this by 6 o'clock. I'm sure he'll be here soon. As I told you, I was going to go to Washington, D.C., and so I did. Was that July 27th? The meeting I had with Senate Energy Committee staff was very interesting about hydrofracking. I emphasized the concerns we have from Cornell Research about climate change and shale gas. They're very concerned. They're trying to gather as much information as they can, and they did ask me sort of what can we do, so I'm working on a list of things, sort of asks that I feel are important. For one thing, the U.S. Energy Information Agency has an annual outlook about energy conditions, and one of the things in preparing for the meeting, one of the things I learned was that they are actually projecting that we will be a net exporter of gas, natural gas, by 2016, which is like tomorrow. So just in time, if we should, say, transform our power plants over to gas or transform our vehicle fleets over to gas, that'd probably be done by about 2016 when, of course, we'll start selling gas to Europe and China, and the price, by coincidence, will go up in the United States. So I wanted to highlight that as a concern. So that's a number of things, so that the conversations will continue there. And in Albany, there's a large rally planned for August 25th, 6th, and 7th in Albany, the weekend of 25th and 6th, for organizing and workshops, and then sort of big rally is on Monday the 27th, also in New York City. And there will be a pledge that people will be taking, and I can send that around to you, a pledge to sort of to demonstrate and fight fracking in New York State. So that's all on that topic. Carol, are you going to talk about the airport annual report?
About the what?
Airport annual report.
Oh, yeah, I was going to wait for the actual to do that, but I didn't think I should circulate this one during the meeting because people will start reading this one.
Okay.
But it will be in the back, the airport green master plan, and it is online on the airports for the public who might be listening now. It is on the website for the airport, did a green master plan, and it's just a beautiful document with a lot of good summary and of directions that we are bringing our airport in.
Okay. I have set up a meeting of not exactly the search committee for the next finance director, but sort of the pre-search committee. So next Monday, the 13th, I've asked Jim Dennis as budget chair, Dooley Kiefer as GO chair, to sit together with Anita, Stephen Estes, and David and Joe, and begin the conversation about what the job is like, what kind of search we should undertake, who should be on the search committee, and what we should be looking for. And I think Jim wants to ask David 5 things he wants to tell the new person. So I hope you're working on your homework, David. So that's following a week from Monday. Or next Monday. And finally, the NYSAC conference is coming up in September. September 12th to 14th. It's nearby. It's in Syracuse. You should all have this. It's worth, since it's so close, worth going up for the day if you can't take time to stay overnight. And there are, Karen wants to know about your attendance by September, by August 15th, please. She's got to make reservations and would like to get any hotel reservations in on time. So please pay attention to this and let Karen know if you'd like to be coming. We also have to sort of tally up where we are in the legislature budget and figure out how much money we have for these travel expenses. So, and also, one other thing is there are committee meetings the first day. And those are listed in the program. If you'd like to be on one of the NYSAC committees, it's very easy. Just ask. You can just go, but you can also just ask to be on one of the committees. Write to Steve Aquario, and then that'll get passed on. It's useful to actually be part of the groups that help NYSAC to make policy. So, with that, I have some appointments to the WIB, the Workforce Investment Board. Alan Peterson, Michael Stamm, John E. Little, Mary Stasi, Scott Pronti, Patrick McKee, and Michael Rubino. There was a question about Michael Rubino. He, for almost a year, has worked at BorgWarner, even though the resume doesn't say that. It hasn't been updated, but he is the human resources person at BorgWarner. I wanted to let you know that was the case. So, any questions? All right. Svante, Mayor of City of Ithaca, come on up. Thank you so much for coming. I was lucky enough to go to a presentation that Svante did with Senator Gillibrand. Dooley was there. I think Jim, a couple of people were there. And it seemed a really, Svante gave an update on the kinds of things that are in the pipeline for the City of Ithaca. And I thought it would be worth taking a few minutes for us to hear directly from Svante. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. And a little bit sweaty, I actually spent a bike tour. Has everybody heard about the 21 boxes project that the City of Ithaca is doing? We are taking the 21 electrical boxes. A lot of people don't even know this is about. I spoke to a property owner and literally, I lived there for 10 years. I didn't even notice that the box is right at the top. It's a plain, silverish electrical box. We got 21 different artists to do original works of art.
Thank you very much.
So we have 21 different artists, all of which are going to do original pieces of artwork. This is certified, approved public graffiti. Artwork on these 21 electrical boxes. So we're going to have public art on 21 blocks in the city that before didn't have it. Very exciting. I just took a bike tour of 8 of them, and I'm a little breathless. So the commons. This is Ithaca Commons. You know, we all love it. We all love to be on it. We're all a little bit embarrassed to take our friends and family there. You know, this is what I call the messy living room syndrome. This is when you have a messy living room, but you don't notice it until your guests come to visit. And as soon as you bring them on, you start noticing the cracks that you have in the pavement. You start noticing the corroded utilities, the utilities that actually don't even work anymore, the trip hazards. What's worse is that we now know that our utilities that are the first wave of the road are now near the end of their useful life. We've got water pipes that are rated to last for 50 years. They're now 100 years old underneath the commons. We've experienced in the last 4 years water main breaks, thankfully, on each end of the commons, none directly below any of the pavilions or the planters. But if and when that happens, it's going to be an extremely expensive repair project, and we may lose quite a lot of water while we try to dig through. So what the city has decided to do, and this actually began under Mayor Peterson's administration, is we decided to do a complete commons rehabilitation project, starting from below the ground and going all the way up. We replace the utilities and lay the amenities, things like the trees, the park benches, the seatings, the pavilions, the lighting, put them back and not only put them back where they were, put them in a place that's not as obtrusive, not as obstructive for the utilities, but also put them back in a way that's more modern and more inviting. So this is the project from a bird's eye view, literally from a bird's eye view. So you can see, instead of having all of the amenities right down the center, we've separated them into two narrow strips along either edge. This way, you'll still have those sort of corridors that we have in front of each storefront on both the north and the south side of the commons, but you'll also have an alley right down the middle. This will give us better fire access for our fire trucks. We'll also create a more open, inviting feeling for the commons because you can see all the way down it. You can see what's going on the commons, and it's more welcoming. You can see, too, that we've moved the pavilion to the very north end of the bank alley. It's going to allow us to use a larger stage so we can have larger acts perform. But we can also fit more people in all of Bank Alley, right? We can fit now hundreds of people in Bank Alley to watch a show without obstructing traffic, foot traffic, on the rest of the commons headed east to west. You also see, you'll also see a couple of changes. One very exciting one is with the lighting. Instead of having street lights, which create quite a bit of light pollution, but also are aesthetically not what we're looking for, we're going to have cantilevered lights. Lights that actually stretch back and forth across the commons, about 20 feet above the, 18 feet exactly above the commons. This is going to create less light pollution, but actually more light for the folks on the ground, and we think a more vibrant nightlife. So this is the commons before, and this is what it'll look like after. You can notice the long alley down the middle, the narrow strips of amenities, and the lights. You may just be able to see the lights. Again, this is the existing bank alley. And this is what it'll look like, complete with a water structure that's made to resemble our gorges. This will be just a light trickle of water. If anybody's seen the new installation on Cornell's campus, in the near the Ag Quad, it's going to be similar to that.
Near the what?
Near Bailey Hall. Yep, that's right. Yeah. Right. You see, we'll also have improved seating and amenities, including inflexible seating, so people can actually move their chairs around, whether they're sitting by themselves, with two people, with five people. We'll have seating that's actually appealing. So how are we going to pay for it? Here's the question. We the city, have already contributed $3.5 million in funding through a capital project. We've requested federal grants. We've requested funding through New York State, through the Consolidated Funding Application. And we're currently soliciting additional community funding. Now, I will say at this point, okay, I'll get through this, and then I'll tell you the good news. So we've packaged this project, this $8 million commons project, with a whole series of other transit upgrades that we'd like to make, some to TCAT, some to car share, some to our roads themselves to make them more transit-friendly, and some to our biking infrastructure. One that I'll point out that I'm a particularly big fan of, and I hope we can do, is actually what's called a signal controller. What you can see is that the bus is sending a signal to the traffic light up ahead that will turn the red light to green as it approaches. So the bus is actually literally only stop, and they're making a stop. Not only is this more fuel efficient because they don't have to stall, but it actually makes the bus the faster way to get around town, which makes it the more appealing way to get around town. And I want one, basically. Okay, so this is the break. So the entire, all of those transit upgrades, transportation upgrades, and the commons upgrades total a combined $18.5 million. Now, the good news is, we just found this out 2 weeks ago, is that we have received $4.5 million from the federal government to help us with our commons and transit upgrades. This is such good news that Senator Gillibrand's office called me right away and said, we want you to know that thanks to Senator Gillibrand's hard work, you'll be getting $4.5 million. That was good. And then I hung up the phone, and Senator Schumer's office called me right away and said, we want you to know that thanks to Senator Schumer's hard work, you'll be getting $4.5 million. So
you got $9 million?
That's what I should have, if I was thinking faster. Yeah, so that's very good news. That means that at least some of this work can continue. The $4.5 million plus the $3.5 million from the city give us a good start. We're hoping that we'll receive $4 million from the state to this latest round of funding that's coming through the regional councils. We've submitted the application, and we're very hopeful. And as you can see, the $0.5 million to $6.5 million. Now, we have some ideas where we can get that, but we're always open to others. Some other ideas will include the water and sewer work that we have to do. For those who don't know, the water and sewer actually has separate capital accounts than the city of Ithaca proper. And when they replace their water and sewer lines, they will have to make an investment. That could be anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. The commons property owners that make up the bid, the business improvement district, have pledged up to $500,000 should it be necessary. We're also looking for private individuals, donors, foundations, wherever we can. And, you know, the timing on this couldn't be better because we have a lot of proposed downtown development coming in the next couple of years. Some of it you already see. We've got a lot of cranes downtown, more than we've had in years right now, because for a whole variety of factors, some things are just happened to come along at this moment. Other things have been waiting for quite a while to get financing, and finally the banks are starting to loosen up. So we think this is actually a great opportunity to do the Commons redesign project because it will help first with construction staging, right? If there's other construction happening on or around the Commons, you can actually share staging sites for both theirs and ours, our project. And second, if we can time these right, if we can implement them right, then we can actually have our Commons project done at the same time that these downtown projects are going to open. So the first is proposed Hotel Ithaca. This is on a site right next to Madeline's restaurant. This is on the east end of the Commons. This is a proposed $28 million hotel. It'll add 124 rooms downtown and 80 new jobs, including a bar and a restaurant and some convention space. This is actually, it's been called a Hotel Ithaca, and it just got its flag, a national chain, which is Marriott. And what we hear is that Bill Marriott himself, the chairman and CEO, is particularly interested in this project because he is a very large donor to Cornell University. So he's been sitting in on all the design meetings for this hotel, which is unusual for a project this size. Breckenridge, which I'm sure everyone here knows, you can probably hear the pile driving from here, is what's replacing the Women's Community Building. This is an excellent project by INHS. It's going to be a $15 million project. It's going to have low-income housing and moderate-income housing. 52 one- and two-bedroom apartments. Now, this is excellent because it gets us low-income housing, but it also gets us mixed-income housing, which is something that we don't have a lot of in the city. And what's more, it's going in the right place. It's going right on the transit line. It's going a block from downtown where economic opportunities are, educational opportunities are. This is where we need low-income folks to live. Another project that's underway and actually should be breaking ground next year is the Seneca Way project. This is a project that just got its approvals from the city of Ithaca. This is on the base of East Hill as it enters the Commons, right across the street from the Gateway Plaza. It's an $11.5 million mixed-use project with 32 one-bedroom apartments, 6 two-bedroom apartments, and 9,000 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor. We also have a proposed Holiday Inn project. So we already have the Holiday Inn. What they're proposing is to add a second tower and not to add that many more rooms. I believe they're only adding 14 more rooms. What they're going to add is convention space. And the business they're going after are conferences and conventions that are happening in midweek and sort of off-peak times, right? So they're not going to compete directly with the Statler, which does the most convention business of anyone in the city. But they're going to bring conferences that otherwise could never get into the Statler. And this is great for our downtown merchants. Our downtown merchants are extremely excited about this because we're going to be getting visitors in times of the year that we're just not accustomed to having them. We're also, so as you can see, it's a second tower. It doesn't expand the footprint of the site. It just tears down a bit of what exists and creates a second tower in the back of that shop. The top will also be a rooftop entertainment area, which I think is code for a bar, I think, although I can't get the developer to say that. The proposed Cuba Place residences. These are very exciting. These are actually, these have been in the works for quite a while. Cuba Green 1 is already up and operating and has been full since the very day that it opened. And Cuba Green 2 finally just got financing, hopes to break ground this fall. And what it's going to be is an $11 million mixed-use project with 5,000 square feet of commercial space and 35 apartments. These are actually going to be loft apartments, right? So one and two bedrooms, lofted. So from floor to ceiling, it'll be about 18 feet. It should be a very unique place to live in the city. We don't have anything like this in the city right now. And that's it. That's all the downtown projects that are slated to at least break ground in the next year and a half. Quite a few of those, again, are going to break ground this fall. So you'll see continued construction work. And really, I mean, what's exciting about all of these is not just the taxes that they will contribute, which is a great thing and badly needed in the city of Ithaca. You know, building this tax base is very important. But all of the people that are now going to live on or near the Commons and therefore shop on or near the Commons, dine on or near the Commons, instead of using their cars to get out to Route 13 or up to the mall, they're going to be frequenting local businesses, not just because they care about local businesses, but because it will actually be faster and more convenient for them too. You know, we feel like this is really is the key to building a stronger Commons and a stronger downtown, is making access to the Commons faster, more convenient, and more comfortable. That's what the redesign is about, more comfortable than it is currently. Did I say the 10 minutes?
That's great. Thank you, Cervante.
Thank you.
That's very very exciting. Any questions? Jim?
Yeah. Thank you for coming over, Mayor. It's always a pleasure to see you. Seneca Way and Cougar Place, are they both market-rate apartments that they're talking about in those?
Yep. Yep, at the moment. Yeah, so Cougar Place 1 was built intended to be affordable housing.
Not exactly.
That's to mixed success. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So Cayuga Place 2 is actually going to be built to just be market rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Dooley?
Cayuga Place, it looks like six stories here, but I remember reading in the paper that it had been lowered and
shrunk a bit.
Yeah, so what? How many stories is it tall?
It is six. I believe it was shrunk from 7 to 6.
That's it?
I think that was it because they couldn't. Above 6, their economics changed. They had to drive the piles further, apparently.
Well, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about the Marriott Hotel and where it is. I commute home on Green Street, and it's already scary to go around that curve as people are jockeying for lanes, and I cannot envision access there. So I have not seen anything that shows me how it's going to work. Is something available?
Sure. So the planning board has all of the documents. The planning board went actually through with TCAT and with our traffic and transportation engineers. This actually was the major holdup of the project in the approvals process. So they had to make sure that they knew how many car trips this was going to generate, how much traffic this was going to generate. One of the things they did to mitigate it is actually move the TCAT bus stop. Right? So instead of stopping in front of what's right now, the hotel, the stop will move over to West MLK or East MLK State Street in front of near where the mayor building is. Right? So just a block off the commons. The second thing it'll do to mitigate is their parking will actually be in the Green Street garage. So before you hit the tuning fork even, a lot of the traffic is going to be turning off into the garage and parking there. And what we hope is that actually the cars will stay there for the duration of the visitor's trip, and they'll choose to use TCAT, and more importantly, they'll choose to dine and shop and walk around the commons instead of getting back into their cars. But if you're interested in seeing exactly the transportation traffic mitigation plans, you can check the planning board's minutes from testing my memory. You check Joanne Cornish at the city. She can point you in the right direction. Yes, Peter.
Oh. Hi, Svante. First a question and second an observation.
Okay.
The question is, in the redesigned commons, are the food vendors in Bank Alley going to stay there? It didn't look like it from the picture I saw.
There will be areas for food vending, but they won't all be in Bank Alley. So it'll be sort of scattered throughout.
So you have the same total food vendors.
Yeah, we'll have the same total space available for food vending. Yeah.
Okay, that's question number one. And observation is that I think something that's unique about the Commons, I don't know how unique, but is that it's a hodgepodge as you walk through it, which I find interesting. Mm-hmm. That is, there is no straight path from east to west through it. It's different vistas, different things to look at. And the picture that you showed lacked that. It looked like you could see all the way from east to west through the trees, which somehow seems less imaginative or interesting or something.
Yeah.
That was the comment.
Okay. That's a fair comment, and it's actually one that was repeated. I tell you that this design process has been going on for over 2.5 years now. We've got a almost 30-person Commons Client Committee that's working with Sasaki Consultants out of Boston. And one of the central tensions of the Commons is, and always has been, it really always has been, is this a place for order or is it a place for chaos? Is it a place for community or is it a place for commerce? You know, and the answer has to be both, right? If it's going to survive, it has to be both. It has to be orderly to an extent that people can feel comfortable there and move through there, and that our life safety people can respond there. But it also has to be chaotic enough to be joyful and fun and a place worth being. You know, you can make it too orderly, and it's it could look like a street. So, you know, that's something they tried to balance and juggle. This is what they came up with, but, I mean, your point is well taken.
Carolyn and Pat?
Yeah, where do the discussions about district heating stand? It just seems like this is the superb opportunity to make sure that we do something like that.
Mm-hmm. So we're actually in the same round that we're applying to the state. A private group is applying to the state for funds to get a feasibility study together. Once a feasibility study is together, you can then take that to financing. People would finance a project, and they would build it. Ideally, we would do it at the same time. But it seems like, we don't know for sure, it seems like the Commons project is moving just a bit faster than the district heating project. So if that's the case, what we're going to do is we're going to leave space under the ground, right? We're going to leave some square footage for a utility vault that would carry possibly power, possibly steam, and possibly both, right? Two vaults that would carry both. And we're going to make sure, one thing that we didn't do so well when we first built the Commons in the early 70s is we didn't make it easily repairable, right? We can just unzip the Commons, fix what's going on underneath, and then zip it back up. We actually, we used materials that were, once we tore it up, we actually had to do pretty complete rebuilds, and that's the reason why there's so much cracking now. The materials we're going to use here are actually much easier to remove and replace without disturbing anything. It's actually why you'll see, so I didn't go into the details of the utilities, but these three lanes, the one on the left, the right, and down the center, that's where you're going to find the utilities. The utilities will no longer be right under the trees, which has caused problems, right under the planters, right under the pavilions. So if we do, if the district heating gets on its feet, and we've already done this project, we can still make room for it by simply unzipping a lane down the center, laying the utility vaults, and zipping it back up.
And how about discussions with the various developers to make sure that they're aware of the opportunity and whatever? I mean, if you don't have the assistance available and funding to do the district heating in advance, and we've already missed the opportunity with the affordable units that it should have been part of it, because if anybody needs to have their utilities be at a lower cost, it would have been that one.
Right.
But the others, it just would be a shame to lose the opportunity.
The new developers are all aware, and anybody new that's coming in and taking a look at the Commons, because we still are getting new people interested in building, we're making them aware too, and that's actually going to be a part of the feasibility study. Who owns buildings on the Commons right now that would want to opt in, right? And how many square feet would they need to heat? And who could be building that would want to opt in.
So is there a public role for some application to make this what's still a fairly unusual approach in the United States?
There may be. At the moment, we've left it to a private company, and we've endorsed their efforts so far, but we haven't had any forays into it. I mean, it's not something we have experience with.
Thanks.
Pat, Frank, and Jim.
Thank you for coming and showing this to us. It's been very interesting. In a previous incarnation, shall I say, of planning for a commons redesign, one of the things that we talked about in terms of encouraging people to live in the central part of the community and being able to shop there and get the things that they need there, had to do with the need for a grocery store and a pharmacy. Those were two primary amenities that we knew that people wanted. One of the things we discovered about trying to locate a pharmacy in the downtown is that their corporate business plans all now call for a drive-through for prescriptions. And then there are sort of inherent problems with space needed for a grocery store. So I'm just wondering if you have talked about that and have any thoughts or ideas or some creative ways that you're looking at those two amenities.
Yep, absolutely. That is one of the largest, that along with actually access to healthcare,
Right.
Particularly for seniors who'd like to age in place, right, and may even want to move into the center of the city or the center of the county so that they don't have to deal with the three-floor house that they have or the yard that they, you know, don't want to mow anymore, and they want to be able to walk to the restaurants and to Cinemopolis. So those are the three things: pharmacy, grocery store, and healthcare. And the problem with the grocery store and healthcare is that both of their models require, if you're not going to have parking, if you're not going to have easy drive-in access, you have to have a certain population density within a half a mile or a mile. Right? They have to believe when they come in there are enough people within walking distance to reach them. And right now we're just not there downtown. We don't have that many people living on the commons to support it. But we did reach that density when we added the Cayuga Place or Cayuga Green 1 project for the pharmacy. So because we now have, I think that's 60 or 70 units right above the ground floor, and because there are those proposed projects in the Cayuga Green 2, we now do have a fully functioning pharmacy right on Green Street. I believe it's Palmer Pharmacy. It's right on Green Street in a short walk across the street from the Commons. So they were able to come through. So that sort of proved the test case for the pharmacy anyway. But, you know, a grocery store needs a lot more square footage.
Right.
So we're still working on the grocery store, but it's tough.
Some of us go to Oasis a couple times a week, and yeah. I know it's not everything, but that plus the farmer's market in the summer covers a lot of bases. Frank?
Mayor? Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
First, thanks very much for your support regarding TCAT and coming to the budget meeting. So we really appreciated that.
I couldn't miss it. You know, anybody who doesn't know, I ride the TCAT twice a day. So if I missed it, I would have caught a lot of heck.
Did you check the electrical boxes riding TCAT?
No.
A question just about construction. And then I want to ask you one about other construction. A couple of years ago when the parking garage was under construction and the helix was coming down and everything else, the commons merchants really suffered because the traffic just wasn't there. People stayed away. How long is this project slated to take? And is there going to be a provision to have the merchants participate in some way so they know what the downtime is for their businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. So the downtime, best case scenario, and this is if we get a full funding, a lot of this depends on funding, is we can do this entire project in 12 months. Worst case is 18 months to 2 years.
Wow.
So our first step is to try to get it to as short a window as possible. 12 months would be ideal. The second thing is we, along with the DIA, the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, have put together a $150,000 construction mitigation fund. Right? So this is a fund that's going to be spent just on mitigating the negative impacts on the commons merchants. What we did next is once we had the fund in place, we actually sent a survey to all of the merchants on the commons asking them what sort of ideas, in what ways should the fund be used. Right? So this is everything. This questionnaire had more than 100 questions on it, from signage actually came back the highest rated. Signage letting people know how long the construction was going to last, what to expect, how to access the commons, the fact that the commons was still open, and most importantly, images of what the commons is going to look like when it was finished so people could see a light at the end of the tunnel. That was one idea, and ideas ranged from trying to make, you know, trying to do something fun with the construction while I was there, maybe creating educational opportunities for young people to see construction up close or to learn something about it, and also to get people to the commons. Continuing to have events. If we can't do our same events like Chili Fest and Apple Harvest Fest on the commons, can we do them nearby in DeWitt Park or maybe in the parking lot behind the Ithaca Journal building? All sorts of ideas. And the probably the most important idea is going to be carefully, very, very carefully staging this construction so that access to the commons is never completely cut off at any one time, so that people can still get to either on the front side or the back side every store that's there. So it's something we're thinking about and working on even now, even before we have the full funding in place, because we know once we get the full funding, our funders are going to want to see us break ground as soon as possible. So we're trying to get our ducks in a row before then.
This has nothing to do with the comments.
Yeah.
But can you say something about when completion is slated for the Clinton Street Bridge and also for Novar's project up on State Street?
I could, but I don't want to jinx it. I'm kidding. You know, my jokes went over maybe better at the city council. I don't know. This crowd is little. The Clinton Street Bridge will actually be substantially done. That means the road will be back and people will be able to travel over it by November of this year. That's our hope. Now, all of the sidewalk work and complete road reconstruction that's going to happen just uphill of the bridge won't be done until July of next year. But the road will be passable, and we will have traffic with some limited interruptions after November of this year if construction stays on schedule. John Novar's work on East State MLK is actually, he has a couple hundred students in there already, believe it or not. He moved them in last week. The second and third phases of the project won't be completed until August of next year, when they'll have a full 1,200 units online. But if you can see, so you'll see the ones that are most completely finished are the ones furthest up the hill. He already has the grass down and trees, and some very mature trees, actually, which I was impressed by. Usually they show you in the site plan, they show you what the mature trees will look like 30 years from now, and then they build the project and they put little weak saplings in front, and you're like, oh, and you got to wait 30 years to see. Well, he actually put mature trees in front, so it looks great. The ones below, the exteriors aren't done, but apparently the interiors are, and he has students in there. In fact, we know that he reserved 200 hotel rooms throughout the county for this month in case the construction project wasn't done. But he got there. He got a certificate of occupancy, so they're all moved in.
That's amazing. Yeah. Jim.
Martha, actually, I would love to continue the discussion, but I really didn't want to say anything else.
I thought your hand was up. All right. I wanted to ask, Savante, you must have tallied up all the new housing units this represents.
So
these
projects.
The grand number?
I can give you a round number between. This includes College Town Terrace and a new project by the Lambrow family on Eddy Street that just opened, and the downtown projects. It's going to be over 1,600 units just from these. It's also going to be an additional 200 or so hotel rooms. And what's the square footage for commercial? And quite a few square feet for commercial space. Yeah.
How many hotel rooms I missed that?
Over 200.
Okay.
Yeah, between Hotel Ithaca and the Holiday Inn.
The housing units, that is fantastic news.
Yeah.
That's just great. Before I go to Pat, you don't have all the money. Are you going to do you have enough to start, like next spring or anything? Or?
It all depends. So it's an $18.5 million project total, but it's all scalable, right? If we get $8 million set aside for the commons, we can start the commons right away. If we get $500,000 for the bike sharing program, we can start that right away. If we get some transit funds, we can start it right away. So as soon as we find out from the state this fall how much of the $4 million, if any, of the $4 million we get, we're going to take a look and see if we can start the commons project. Now, if we get to that $8 million number, we will, in all likelihood, start the commons project next summer.
By when?
Next summer.
Okay.
Well, Martha?
Pat.
Oh,
Pat and Frank.
I was going to ask about the number of housing units total, so didn't
okay. Yeah. Thanks, Frank.
The committee that you sit on, Martha, the economic...
The council.
The council. Yeah, this certainly is an economic... stimulator. Wouldn't that, is that the fund that you're going after for the state?
Yep. And I've been trying to woo Martha's vote for quite some time.
I don't think we get to vote.
No, we don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to recuse ourselves for local projects. Okay. But it does, that's exactly the pot that we're going for. And it's exactly this is the kind of project they got funded last time, you know.
Yeah.
We intentionally sort of held back in our region because we thought they were going for a more, you know, regional approach, but they ended up just giving out projects like this. So we said we won't hold back anymore.
Good luck.
Right. Thank
really.
You. Thank you.
And thanks for opening the bridge for the Ithaca College graduation.
Oh, yeah. That was a pleasure. That was a pleasure. I felt they're our neighbors, so if it's an important time for them, it's an important time for us.
Mike?
Mayor, 1,600 units for housing is pretty impressive, but it doesn't sound like many of them are going to be low to moderate income. Mm-hmm. In the rural areas, we're a little bit concerned that the city is, by not addressing the low to moderate income, is trying to shed that population off to the rural areas. Mm-hmm. So we would certainly like to see the city taking a look at that kind of thing to service that sub-segment of its population.
Yep, without a doubt. And we feel the same, actually. We're worried. You know, we're seeing populations that are moving out to rural areas, not because they'd like to, but that's the only place they can get Section 8 housing, and it's the only place they can afford to live. So while INHS has done great work over the years to create a lot of low-income housing in the city, it's not enough, and we need more. But we also saw, we're seeing in our housing demand a strange thing happen where there is actually not enough market rate housing. So what's happening is you're having people who can afford to pay market rate, $1,000 a month, $1,200 a month, living in apartments that an irrational market would never go for that much, never demand that much. But because there's so much pent-up demand, the landlords know they can charge it and they can get it. So they're charging $1,000 per bedroom, a lot of times from students, for housing that's 100 years old and is falling down around them, right? But if instead those same landlords, you know, had to compete with, say, 1,600 new units, right, the way that they compete is by lowering their rents to a more rational rate. When all of a sudden they can't charge $1,000 a bedroom anymore, they may start to list it at $900 or $800 or $700 a month. You know, and then the places that before we listed at $700 a month, even though, again, in a rational marketplace, we listed at 500, suddenly they fall down to 500 a month, and it sort of trickles down that way. So I think we have to take a two-pronged approach, where one, we build more affordable housing in the city, and second, we build more market rate housing in the city, and that way we just sort of try to get our market back where it should be. The folks who are experts in these things say that a healthy housing market will have a vacancy rate between 5 and 8%. That's a healthy, that's, landlords are still making profits, municipalities are humming, but tenants and people looking to buy homes can still find places at reasonable prices. Right? That's between 5 and 8%. Anything more than that, and you really see a degradation of the tax base. You see landlords struggling to get by. Tenants can afford really low rent, and people can afford really low prices. But when the government and infrastructure is crumbling, who wants to live there? But we're in the exact opposite case. We have a rental vacancy rate in the city, this is the core of the city, of 0.5%. It means 99.5% of places are taken. That's rental and owner-occupied. That creates an environment where when you go into a landlord's office and you say, I like this place, but $1,000 is too much. What if I gave you $800 a month? And they say, get out of my office. Because there's somebody behind you that can afford it. Same thing goes with, you know, you see a house on the market that you want to buy. You can't quite get to the asking price. You offer them 90% of the asking price. They say, thanks, but no thanks. I know I can get this, you know, within weeks. So it's tough, and you're absolutely right. We've got to sort of tackle it from both angles. And this is heavy. With the exception of Breckenridge, none of the other projects I mentioned have low-income housing in it. So this is heavy on the market rate side.
And none of them have any public money in them. Yeah. There's no IDA money in them. There's no...
The only... the Seneca Way does have new market tax credits, so those are federal tax credits. But
okay.
Other than that, there's no IDA abatements.
So that's an interesting way of approaching it to try to suppress the rents, but I wonder if it won't also suppress the maintenance of the properties. Are there any plans to try to build any low to moderate income new housing in Ithaca?
Besides Breckenridge, Breckenridge is the one that's closest to completion in the pipeline. I can say there are some very low income, in fact, homeless shelters in the pipeline as well. Folks we've been talking about who are developing things on the West End. Besides that, I think, you know, INHS has been our best ally in creating low-income housing over the last two decades in the city, and this project is the most unique project they've ever done, I think it's fair to say, and it's taken up a lot of their capacity. So I think this is what they've been focused on. Once they get over that hump, I think they'll turn back to creating more throughout the city, my hope.
Kat.
Just a quick question. How many units now are in the College Town Terrace?
I believe it's
1268, last I knew.
12 is the total. 1,200 is the total. But right now, it's between 2 and 300.
You know, I meant.
Oh, total.
Of the 1,600 you're talking
yeah,
about.
1,200.
So 1,200 are the College Town
exactly,
tariffs.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Julie.
I just thought of another question.
Yeah.
Can you shed any light on why, if the college chose not to participate in the transit hub application?
I can't shed much. I can't shed much. I know that they do have a project, sort of a complete street project they're interested in doing at about $1.5 million, around $1.5 million to connect 96 down to downtown. Right. We spoke with them early on about them joining our application, so this would actually be a $20 million project, and they ultimately declined to join us.
It seems mysterious to me.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
There are no politics like campus politics, you know, and it's a mystery. It's a mystery to me.
Mike, your concern about lower income housing, lower cost housing is really important. But I think we've seen a number of years go by without any increase in the supply, and we have such a scarcity, such a shortage of housing that, you know, I sort of every unit is a plus and can help to bring the prices down throughout the market. Obviously we have to concentrate on the subsidies that are necessary, frankly, for lower cost housing. But and there are things in the pipeline. But yeah go ahead.
I'd love to have a stronger discussion about with that with you sometime.
Sure.
I don't know if I totally agree with you.
Sure. Well, I would love to talk with you about it. I mean, what I'm saying in the city is actually it's put bluntly, but what I'm saying is a de facto gentrification. Right? Neighborhoods that before used to be of a certain income level are seeing influxes of students where students never used to live before. Faculty members or faculty members never used to live before. We're seeing Fall Creek, which was a blue-collar neighborhood, now have housing prices, small houses, you know, being moved into by faculty and students, which is is great, except the housing prices have gone doubled in a decade. You know, you got houses down there that are now selling for $250,000, $300,000. And for everybody else who's left on the block, people who've been on the block and in the neighborhood for years, the taxes are going up, and now they have to move out. A lot of these folks are moving out, as you said, into the rural areas. So the question is, how do we draw that back? I mean, INHS actually has a very creative model where they interrupt the loop of gentrification at one of the... Because one of the reasons it's so hard to stop gentrification is because it's something of a virtuous cycle, right? Somebody of means moves into a neighborhood. That's not a bad thing. They buy a house. That's not a bad thing. They fix up the house. That itself is not a bad thing. Everybody's property values go up. That's not a bad thing. Everybody's property taxes go up. That is a bad thing, you know? So, like, how do we get people to still buy homes, fix up properties, improve neighborhoods without increasing everybody's assessment? And one of the things INHS does and has done for a while is actually they target, they've had a method of going into a neighborhood and looking at a block and actually targeting the most run-down house on the block and turning it into the nicest house on the block, which is what happens in the cycle of gentrification. But what's interesting is what they do is once they turn it into the nicest house on the block, they control the price. Right? They say, we're going to sell this, but it has to be permanently affordable. Right? And all of a sudden you have all of the good things that come with that cycle without the negative of pushing people out. You know, so I'd love to speak with you more about it.
And the planning department is working on data, working on an update of our sort of needs assessment. It is time to sort of waiting for a report back from the Enter consultants, and we should hear from Ed about that within a month or two. But it's obviously a really important issue. Well, Savanti, thank you so much. Pat? Yeah.
Do we know when that report might be, when we anticipate that will be ready?
I'm looking at the clock.
That would be nice.
Ed has told, I think he's told PDEC, it's, you know, they keep hearing from the consultant that it's almost done, it's almost done. I think within, I believe he's expecting it within a month or two.
Okay.
And we'll certainly get that report for everybody and have a presentation.
Thank you for allowing me to be here, and thank you for allowing me to take up so much time. And if you'd ever like me to come back and talk about anything going on in the city, I'd be more than happy to, because it's, you know, we are, we're in this together. Like I said about Ithaca College, if it matters to them, it matters to us. Same is true for us in the county. I mean, I can't imagine a more symbiotic relationship. We're counting on you guys. That's why I watch the meeting so much.
Well, thanks a million, Savante. It was great to have you here. And next meeting, we're going to have a report from Roxy on hydrilla. So.
Okay, Roxy. You'll love Roxy. She's got better jokes. So.
This is the good, and that'll be the bad and the ugly. So, all right, Brian.
Can I get one last thing? I'd kind of like an assist, because I know yesterday morning I ran into Savante, and he said, oh, yeah, I'm coming to your meeting. What am I supposed to be talking about?
Really? And he reminded me. He said, it says here it's in downtown something. I said, the PowerPoint. So I got it together. So thank you, Ryan.
Good thing it was on our agenda.
Yeah. That's good.
I had to look that up. But,
that's good. He would have called me anyway. All right. Thanks a lot, Savante. All right. Well, let's see. Go to back our reports. County Administrator. What? Okay. County Administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I want to keep this in the same spirit of an upbeat presentation that the mayor just said, and also, you know, to recognize the importance of public art. So I'm happy to tell you that the old library will continue to exist as a location for public art for at least a little while longer. I was trying to figure out how to make this short but sweet report a little sweeter. Really, I just have two things to report on tonight. The budget is progressing. I think it's progressing on a pretty good track. Kevin and I are spending a lot of time right now with the departments going through their budgets. We will present the budget to you in your first September meeting, and then your review will pick up after that. So again, I think we're on a pretty good track to deliver you a budget that's within the parameters that you set back in April. The other part of my report is the situation with the old library. I think all of you know through an email from me or through conversations with me that we've had a setback in terms of our ability to vacate the old library, to move the occupants of the basement into better space and more permanent space so that we can free up that building. We learned last week that the space that we had our eye on, and that in fact is on your agenda tonight to approve for a lease, has been leased to another tenant. So as I put in the email, we've tried to dust ourselves off and get back on the horse, and we're beginning to look again for possible space for our tenants, because we still would like to vacate the old library. So I will be asking Mike Lane to withdraw the legislation that's still on your agenda as item L tonight, in recognition of the fact that, again, we've had a bit of a setback there. I think that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? Jim?
Comment. For all of you, the budget process this year, we would like to do it in 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and do it as a sort of a retreat and not over 7 weeks.
That sounds interesting. Okay. Anything else for Jim? All right. Thanks, Joe. Thanks very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I don't have any additional report, but I did leave two reports in everybody's folder. One is the usual, and one is something a little different. So if you have any questions, please feel free to email me or give me a call. Nothing further.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Finance Director David Squires.
I want to alert you about, as you have now been informed, we had a historical low interest rate environment we're operating under, and so we've been looking under every rock, so to speak. So we'll be coming forward in the next meeting or two with a couple of opportunities to refinance existing debt for bonds, for a lease, and also there's an effort, there's financing, potential financing for some energy retrofitting projects under a pool that NYSAC is promoting, that we may be coming forward with that, about $1 million worth of improvements to boilers and so forth. And I also just let you know that part of the job of finance director is the person of last resort if somebody dies without a will. And I've been called upon to bury an individual occasionally because the body remains at the hospital with nobody to claim. So I just want to let you know about an opportunity coming forward in September where one of these individuals who I had to take over and liquidate their estate had a personal DVD collection of thousands of DVDs, which I'll be selling out of my garage over Labor Day weekend.
Well, let's make sure.
It's just incredible about, we cleaned out an apartment that had 120 boxes of math books, because this is a mathematical, a PhD in mathematics. And but as many, DVDs that can fill up a couple of bookshelves in a room, like it's literally 1,000 from Shark Week, every DVD of Shark Week to Buffy the Vampire Killer.
David, can you offer any of those to the library?
Well, I will be if I can't dispose of them, but I have a fiduciary responsibility to raise money to pay bills. So
we'll make sure to put that in the job description. So, any questions for David? All right. Thank you very much, David. One other thing about from my report I forgot to mention. I had talked to Steve Aquario this morning from NYSAC, and he wanted to give me a heads up that the next big thing that it seems the governor is working on, perhaps with the controller, is what's called a super control board. This is the top article in your NYSAC news yesterday. It was called State Takeover. Now, that's not of Medicaid, that's of county budgets. And the proposal seems to be that not just counties or municipalities that are in financial trouble, but perhaps all counties will be asked to send their budgets for approval and review to this control board that's to be set up. So, needless to say, Steve was not pleased. You'll notice in the controller's report yesterday, he spoke about a number of communities that are cities and counties that are in very deep financial trouble. I didn't notice any conversation about mandates or the lack of revenue sharing that used to come from the state to municipalities. But now suddenly they're surprised that municipalities and counties are in financial trouble. So stay tuned on that one. NYSAC would certainly be fighting this very strenuously, and I'll let you know more as we hear more. Thule.
What is the authority that is being cited for that?
They would create new legislation. They would give themselves the authority. I mean, Steve thought that the Senate, if it stays Republican, might do this, had serious doubts that the Assembly would go along with it. It seems to be a backdoor way for public sector unions to be squeezed, that if they are, if a control board says, I'm sorry, you have to cut your expenses, then that would be a new form of pressure on public sector unions that supposedly would let local officials like us off the hook. So these are some of the subtexts that are going on. And I just think, I mean, Steve did say, well, if anything like that is to happen, he would certainly demand that it be paired with a real taking over of mandates. I said, why are we even here? So, Jim?
All of you have to look at the history of control boards in New York State from the 70s, and you will get a a small picture of what those things were able to do under Felix Verhaeten and other people during the terrible crunch in the 1970s. So I think there was another Cuomo involved in some of that. So there's history for that.
The article in the NYSAC News is a report from Fred Dicker from the New York Post. So if you have a chance, take your time. I can actually make a copy of it and put it in your boxes. So. All right, with that good news. We knew there had to be something coming, right? Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn? Mike?
I'd like to withdraw Resolution L, please.
Regretfully. Okay. All right, I'll read the consent agenda. If anything you want pulled off, please let us know. Resolution A, authorization to accept Homeland Security grant funds on behalf of Cornell University to begin and maintain a regional... Okay. There is a document in your left side of your folder related to this, to that item. Resolution B, award of bids, terminal apron rehabilitation, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, award of bids, CFR building operations addition, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, authorization to enter into a lease agreement for record storage. Was that a call to bring it off?
I think that should be off. Yeah.
Okay. And revised Resolution E, authorization to hold a public hearing, local law number E of 2012, amending the Tompkins County Charter and Code, Chapter 28, election districts.
Off.
So the consent agenda, which includes B and C. Can I... What? I'm sorry, I didn't see F. Resolution F, scheduling a public hearing for addition to Agricultural District Number 2, west side of Cuga Lake. So I have a motion on the consent agenda. Frank moves, Pat seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Martha, could you say which ones were pulled?
A, D, and E.
Thank you.
And... So with that, I would like to go to E, Dooley, if you wouldn't mind, the election districts.
At the GO committee meeting just before the legislature, a revised version passed. It's in your folders. It turns out there's one grammatical correction that needs to be made to it in the third whereas, which should read, to provide its recommendation by March 1st rather than their recommendation. Mike Lane pointed that out at our committee meeting, and I appreciated it. I think I've been affected by all the Olympics, where many things that in America we consider singular, they use plural verbs for, like Scotland are ahead, the United States are losing, and so this should be its and not theirs. And with that, I'd like to move this resolution.
All right. Is there a second? Second by Mike. Now, who was it that pulled it off? Carol?
Yeah. First, I'd just like to point out that in our packets, we do finally have some maps that are a little clearer as to exactly where these lines are, and I appreciate that, but I didn't get this until tonight. I hope that in any announcement, either whether this comes out tonight or doesn't, that maps of pretty clear detail should be included in announcements and or links to where people from the public can see the maps in great detail should be included in any announcement. I do not support going to hearing at this point. I don't think that these districts serve the City of Ithaca residents well. The City of Ithaca's Common Council felt strongly enough that four districts such as these, similar to these, didn't work for city neighborhoods. And all of the county legislators who represent city districts who were here for the two meetings of the discussion said the same. City of Ithaca residents are being asked to absorb all of the difference to go from 15 legislators to 14 legislators. And we as a group, you know, in this plan, we would be honoring various town requests regarding their lines and where they're drawn vis-a-vis the county legislature. And I think that we should insist as a group on honoring this overwhelming sense from the majority of those who represent the city of Ithaca about how to draw those lines. And I think we all wanted a process outside of politics, but it becomes political when we serve some requests from some of our municipalities and not from those who represent other parts of our county. So I hope that we will not move this forward tonight and that we will come up with lines that really serve everybody in the county. So, and I urge you to join me in trying to make sure that happens. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. unless I'm mistaken, the resolution on the floor is simply to set the public hearing. And I think that the types of concerns that Carol is raising, certainly there could be individuals that express the same concerns that you have. And it might be wise if we proceeded with the public hearing so that we could hear those concerns beyond those of us that are sitting here. So I'm in favor of proceeding with the public hearing.
Frank, I think the debate is in order because changing the number of districts would obviously right. be a substantive change if this body decided they didn't want to do that. We wouldn't send the 14 district maps to public well, hearings. So it's in order to talk about it, obviously. Right?
Okay.
Thank you.
But in that same vein, Mike and Hank DeLay and that special committee, I think, certainly put in a lot of time. And they also, as Carol has already mentioned, they have adapted some things according to public comment that was that came forward. We did delay the decision a couple of times in deference to the city so we could wait for their deliberations to take place. My understanding, and Carol, you're probably more familiar with this than I am, my understanding is that the city's vote was not unanimous on those districts. Can you clarify some of that?
The city was looking at various scenarios to make four districts work, and the majority ended up deciding that to stick with five districts in the city because it just didn't work for the neighborhoods. And when they, if they were going to be looking, deciding on the four districts, it was going to be four districts the way we had it, the middle time that we had the plan we wanted. So it would seem to me that if we're going to go to four districts, that that ought to be the four districts we go to.
Thank you.
Mike.
Oh, and can I? And I will just add to that that to take it to public hearing, we tend to take things to public hearing that we, you know, have pretty substantially decided about. And this is such a big difference that I don't think it does it justice to think that we're going to bring it to hearing and then just tweak it.
Mike,
we did have a fairly thorough debate about this issue, including the number, when we adopted the resolution authorizing this local law to be drafted based on the recommendation of the Independent Redistricting Committee that we had appointed. So holding the public hearing on this at this point is simply the next step in that. We need to hear from the public as to whether they have issues with what the Independent Commission has recommended to us and we have gone forward with at this point. With respect to the city, I'm very sorry that they chose the political route to overrule the recommendation of their own city committee for four districts down there. As far as equal representation, this is all about equal representation, and that's why we redistrict every 10 years.
Greg, am I to understand that the only district that essentially change the number changes. Is the district that includes Ulysses, the northern part of Enfield, and a little bit of, now a little of the town of Ithaca. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Are you asking about the district numbers themselves?
The number, yes.
Once we finished the decision was made to move forward with the local law for 14 districts, the next conversation is how to number the districts. And after reviewing that with both Governmental Operations and with the Board of Elections Office, the best scenario is what you have before you. We removed the number 15 from the numbering sequence and changed 15 to District 5. Okay. And then in the city, what District 5 then became what is now District 2, and 3 and 4 are reconfigured but very similar. So that's the least amount of impact in order to renumber the county in terms of both the citizen perspective as well as the future modifications that would need to be made within the Board of Elections database and system to reflect the changes per the maps.
Okay, Nathan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that because I wasn't at the previous meetings where this was discussed, I mean, that I fully support the County Independent Redistricting Committee's recommendation, and I support these maps. And in fact, I've maintained from the very beginning that whatever map that they put forward, I would support it, even during the time in the middle where it put my district at risk, and I was fine with that. So I continue to maintain my support for this and will be and vote for it today to go to public hearing, but also will support it all the way to the end.
Okay. Peter?
I take no position as to whether I support the outcome or not. What I support is the process. I believe that independent redistricting is the right way to do it, whether it comes out to be something that affects me positively or negatively. And it would take a huge argument to make me overrule that they had done something really bad, and I don't think that's the case here, so I will support it.
Ready to vote, Dooley?
I think it is reasonable to take this to public hearing, but I take the public hearing very seriously and don't take this as an absolute done deal, Carol.
I can't hear you, Dooley.
I think it is ready to take to public hearing. I don't think of this as a completely done deal, though. I know that the empty desk next to me is usually occupied by a city resident who has very strong feelings similar to Carol's about which of our independent commission's recommendations might serve city residents best. So I look forward to hearing from city residents about these lines, and although I support what our commission did, I am willing to listen to other arguments and see if something more appropriate will come out of that discussion.
Jim.
I will support moving this to the public hearing when the time comes.
All right. So, Leslie.
Well, I think one of the things, and Peter, I appreciate you talking about process because I, too, like process, but I distinctly recall that what came before us prior to the city making its decision that the Independent Redistricting Commission was recommended is something that, as a city rep, many of us sitting in this room as city reps could support, even going to the four districts could support. This is not what we could support. We were all in favor of the very first thing that came to us prior to the city making its decision, and then it came back to this one. So, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out where my house is on the map. I think I'm now District 1, so that has changed as well. So, no, I don't feel like this is where it should be, especially given that there were so many there were objections from us, and especially for me as part of the process. We had a commission that brought to us a four district scenario for the city that worked better, you know, as far as we who represent the city were concerned.
Maybe it's my cold, but isn't this what the commission first recommended, more or less?
Yeah. When the commission came and brought something to us for a vote, it was not this.
Mike?
This was your third thing.
What happened was there was an original scenario from our County Independent Redistricting Commission with four districts, which is basically what you're looking at now. However, when the city committee recommended four districts, our commission said, we will go along with the lines the city committee recommended,
right,
and came back to us with those. When the city committee was overruled by city council, our commission came back and said, let's go back, since they're going to have five anyway, let's go back to what we had originally recommended.
That's right. That's what I thought. And so this is the original recommendation with some small changes, I think, to reduce the number of voting districts, right, Greg?
Yeah. One of the reasons that the Independent Redistricting Commission from the county's group changed back to the original configuration is because the number of overlapping sliver districts was drastically reduced from about 12 or 13 to about 5 with the first scenario that's before you today. So the second version that you reviewed that was done, that the city had proposed, was partially done in a manner to reduce to, well, the first version reduced the number of districts of overlap once the city had defined their five ward scenario. So, and it was also the preferred solution from the county's commission at that point in time.
Thank you, Greg. Okay. Are we ready to vote? All right. All in favor of revised E for a public hearing on August 21st. Please raise your hand. Opposed. That passes 11 to 2. With great thanks to the Redistricting Commission. And I know we're not quite finished, but it's good to acknowledge that. Dooley, you also have... Where are we? The other one off consent, D. Resolution D came off consent. Can you take that one?
Yes, this is a small wording change. It's authorization to enter into a lease agreement for record storage at the Seneca Army Depot bunker. In line 3, it says record center formerly located in the old library. It's still there. So it should say currently located in the old library. That's the change to the wording. And just for your information, I double-checked with the deputy county clerk, and it says what the cost is annually for 10 years, and there really is no inflation factor. It is the same rate for each year for 10 years.
Okay, thank you. So you've moved the...
I'm moving this resolution
with that one change.
Change.
Seconded by Pat. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Let us go to resolution under public safety. There are a number there of rollover items. Peter, if you'd start with G. And we'll come back to reports after.
What,
we let
wasn't
staff
A
go
pulled?
Home.
Wasn't A pulled also?
Yeah, but I'm. I don't think Kevin's waiting for that one.
All right.
We'd start with G. That'd be great.
Okay, so let me move resolution G, a budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2011 to various accounts that report to the Public Safety Committee. And I believe this was approved by Budget and Capital, right?
It was.
Yeah, so I'd like to move it.
Seconded by Dave. Any discussion? We need a short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Clairborn?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous.
Okay, are we ready for H?
Uh-huh.
Appropriation from contingent fund to cover expenses related to prosecution, district attorney's office. I'd like to move that.
Seconded by Brian. Any discussion? Short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous.
Resolution I, appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay reimbursement sheriff's office jail. Let's see. I'd like to move that.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion. All right. Short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
And Resolution J, appropriations from contingent fund terminal pay reimbursement sheriff's office road patrol. And I'd like to make one slight amendment to that. The first name on line four, this refers to Robert Lampman, not to John Lampman.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Leslie. Discussion? All right. Short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right. That's unanimous. We are on a roll, folks. I believe Kevin is also waiting for K, and Kevin and Greg are waiting for M. So, Carol, could you take us to K?
Okay. The resolution on packet page 16, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2011 to various accounts that report to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, and I so move.
Seconded by Dave. Any discussion? All right, short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yep.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. All right, nice. Dooley, would you take M, please?
M.
And there's a revised in your packet.
Appropriation from contingent fund to supplement budgeted funds for redesign of the county website. And the revised one has a change in the first whereas, which makes it clear why the estimate was so much lower than the amount we're talking about today. I move this resolution.
All right. Moved by Dooley, seconded by Jim. Any discussion? Ready to vote. Another roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
For Brian's purposes? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Anyone who wishes to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. All right, we're going to do the rest of the night like this, right? Okay. Okay. Are you all set, Kevin? Greg, you're all set? Very good. All right. Then perhaps we should just then go to our regular order of things. And are you waiting for anything in particular, Paula? Okay. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, your report plus Resolution A.
Resolution A, where is it? Authorization to accept Homeland Security grant funds on behalf of Cornell University to begin and maintain a regional canine explosive detection team. I'll move that.
Seconded by Dave. And Dooley, you pulled it off.
Yeah, I pulled it off because I had expressed my interest in seeing the agreement that was referenced, which I assumed had to be in place in order to proceed this far. And I found in my folder, and maybe everybody else got it too, a copy of a memo of understanding between Cornell and the county. But I also asked to see the budget that was specific to this project, and that's nowhere to be found. And I wanted to say that although I think it's a nice idea for us to be the conduit of federal monies so that Cornell can set up a canine unit, and all the money has to be used for various things, and it will leave some kind of legacy that may or may not continue without the federal monies. And I really wanted to see the budget. And without seeing the budget, I can't support this, although in theory I like the idea. So.
All right. Jim.
I heard some stories about the CUPD and their use of their dog, and someone was telling me that, and how they had had done some really positive things rather recently. And who, Joe, was it you? Would you retell that story?
Yeah, it may have been me. They do have a bomb unit right now that uses a dog. We had an experience not long ago. It was in the wintertime when there was a bomb threat called into the Human Services building. And we quickly moved people out of the building, and within 15 minutes or so, Cornell was there with the dog and did a sweep of the building very quickly and very efficiently. So we've been a beneficiary of this unit in the recent past.
All right. But this is to set up such a unit. As I read the resolution.
Joe and then Peter.
Yeah, there is an existing unit. So I think it's probably to provide additional funds, whether it's for another dog or to somehow support an existing unit, but I do know it was the Cornell unit that came to the Human Services building, and it is an existing operation.
Peter.
Yeah, I would like to inform everybody who doesn't understand this. This has absolutely zero financial implications for the county one way or the other. The reason it's being done this way is that state law or some law does not allow Cornell University to ask for this particular request, and we are doing it as a favor for them because we are allowed to ask for this request, this funding. It seems to me like it's hard to find any reason why we shouldn't fund it. If we ever wanted a dog to go and sniff because there was a bomb threat and we didn't have the dog, I think that would be awful.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution A, please raise your hand. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 12 opposed, 1. That passes 12 to 1. And Peter, do you have any other report?
Yeah, I have a brief report. We did, at our last public safety meeting, have a report from our consultant, Travis Miller, who has been looking at the 911 center. Basically, what he told us after analyzing it is that we don't have to spend any more money than we're spending at the moment, that we're adequately staffed, that we have several problems which have resulted in some difficulties, and the problems namely are in establishing a modern, proper set of protocols and procedures. When a 911 call comes in, everybody that the answer that they get and the information that's received should not depend on who answers the call. It should be absolutely written in stone, questions that are asked and information that's gathered. And that is not done to the extent that it should be done. They reported that the instrumentation that we have is excellent, and that we need to spruce up our operation so that we can get the full usage of that good instrumentation that we have. And we will take steps to follow that and make sure that it happens.
Peter, I think there was, in terms of, it wasn't no money. I mean, it wasn't the center director position was identified as perhaps needing to be upgraded some?
Correct. Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry, I forgot that. No extra positions are required, okay, is what I should have said.
Okay. Dooley?
I just want to ask that the minutes reflect why I voted against the resolution that we just voted on, and that's because the resolution in one of the whereases said that the grant is to create a program, and we've just heard tonight that the program exists and there was no budget to look at. So I just want the details in there so it doesn't seem as though I'm totally arbitrary. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you for your report, Peter. I'd like us to take a 10-minute recess. Jim, what?
Yeah, Martha had my hand up and talking about Peter's report.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And Dooley intervened with why she voted no.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I thought the report was adequate. I didn't think it was amazingly good. I'm looking forward to the full written report that he's going to put out. And frankly, I didn't hear anything that I didn't already know, and I'm not You know, I'm not conversant with all the things that happened at 911, but some of the things that were pointed out were things that I've clearly heard before. So I'm hoping the intense report is a bit more meaty than the slideshow.
All right, thank you. Anything else? All right, when we come back, I'd like to ask Vice Chair Shinagawa to take over up here. I'm really not feeling well, so I'm going to have a seat over there.